with the full story. After the Port Arthur massacre 30 years ago, both sides of politics supported a national gun buyback scheme. But on Sunday, when Albanese and New South Wales Premier Chris Minns announced the state's buyback scheme, following December's anti-Semitic terrorist attack in Bondi, this time, the response was far from bipartisan.
But to suggest a gun buyback is going to solve this for us, is going to stop another Bondi, it's absolute bull.
Today, New South Wales State reporter Penry Buckley on the battle lines being drawn over gun reform. It's Wednesday, the 19th of August. Which was decades ago now. Can you look back and talk us through how we got here?
Yeah, of course. So during the Bondi attack on the 14th of December last year, father and son Sajid and Amit Akram allegedly opened fire on a Hanukkah festival on Bondi Beach, killing 15 people and wounding at least 40 more. It was quickly revealed that they allegedly used firearms registered to Sajid's recreational hunting license in New South Wales. He'd had 6 licensed firearms on a license he'd had since 2023, including 4 so-called long arms that were seized at the scene and a further 2 that were found at a raid of a rental property. So the conversation after the initial shock of that day very quickly turned to both restricting the number of guns and also a buyback of the kind seen after the Port Arthur massacre in 1996, so almost 30 years before. And they were issues that were discussed immediately at the National Cabinet the following day. And then 4 days after the attack on the 19th of December, the federal government announced that it was going ahead with a buyback.
The terrible events at Bondi show we need to get more guns off our streets. We know that one of these terrorists held a firearm license and had 6 guns, in spite of living in the middle of Sydney suburbs there at Bonnyrigg. There's no reason why someone in that situation needed that many guns.
The New South Wales government committed to that buyback on the same day. While many states professed openness to taking part in that initial period, Queensland became the first to say that it wouldn't take part in January, and other states have subsequently followed. So the government missed a deadline in March for there to be consensus. And then on Sunday, we finally had the announcement at a joint press conference between the Prime Minister and the New South Wales Premier, Chris Minns, that New South Wales would be the first participant to take part in the buyback, and as it stands, the only participant.
You mentioned that conversations around gun reform came quite immediately after the Bondi attack. In the days after, we saw opposition leader Sloan,
the month before the attack, and was actually a witness to the events which took place in her electorate of Vaucluse. She came out pretty strongly in favour of bipartisan reform. She supported the early recall of Parliament. She and almost all of the Liberals voted for gun control reforms. Mm-hmm. But slowly she's walked back that position. So in February, she said that she wanted to revisit the laws and that they'd been rushed. She had to clarify the opposition's position after one New South Wales Liberal MP, Wendy Tuckerman, sent an email reportedly by accident to every Liberal electorate in the state, saying that criticising the laws and saying that the buyback should be stopped. And then her comments over the weekend and on Monday, probably the strongest yet, she said that there were legitimate concerns about the buyback, including the costing of the policy, which neither the state or the federal government has provided, but will probably run into the hundreds of millions of dollars. And in her own words, it was absolute bullshit.
It's absolute bullshit. And I'm sorry for the language, it's entirely unlike me, but I am frustrated.
The idea that another Bondi attack would be prevented by a buyback.
I mean, you terrorists are going to walk into a cop shop and hand over their guns? I mean, that's a joke.
It's worth noting that the legislation, both in New South Wales and at a federal level, has already happened. So the buyback will go ahead. Mm-hmm. I don't think they have a way of blocking it.
And we know Pauline Hanson has proudly proclaimed she's a gun owner, staunchly against these gun reforms. What has the political reaction been on a federal level? What are politicians who are against gun reform saying as to why it wouldn't work?
One Nation obviously has come out really strongly against it. Mm. Pauline Hanson said,
"We're actually crucifying those legal gun owners here."
She said something to the effect of, "It's not the guns, it's the people behind the guns."
It wasn't the guns, it was the people behind the guns that are responsible for the Bondi massacre. Let's make that quite clear.
A frequent argument that's been made is that these changes won't prevent criminals from getting their hands on guns. I think that's something Kelly Sloan has said. The National Party have frequently said that these laws impose arbitrary limits on, you know, legitimate uses like farming and pest control.
I think what's disturbing is that somehow it's the almost a million law-abiding firearm owners in this country and their families who are the target, rather than the Islamic terrorists themselves. It's not law-abiding firearm owners that are walking around with firearms on our streets. It's crime gangs and the criminal elements in our society that need to be focused on.
John Howard, the Prime Minister, who was the architect of the Port Arthur buyback, asked 2 days after the attack if he thought that more gun control was the answer, said he didn't think so, and that the government had failed to respond to the root causes of anti-Semitism, or, you know, we need to respond to terrorism in different ways, which, you know, again...
Australia since Port Arthur?
Yes. So Western Australia actually was already carrying out a buyback last year, which concluded in January this year. They introduced limits similar to the ones that now exist in New South Wales. So I think they have a limit of 5 for recreational users, whereas New South Wales has 4. And that had seen around 84,000 firearms removed. Mm-hmm. And it caused consternation amongst the gun lobby prior to the Bondi attack, of course. Mm-hmm. So I think for that reason, they, although they did say they kind of in principle supported the federal buyback, they haven't committed yet to this one. Although there was in principle support from other states like Victoria and South Australia in the immediate aftermath of the buyback, mm-hmm. Queensland became the first to say that they wouldn't participate because it didn't address the root causes. Mm-hmm. I think that was as soon as January. I think Victoria pulled out in May this year, mm-hmm. having commissioned their own review of gun reform, which did recommend the same limit, so 4 weapons for recreational users. But the then Premier, Jacinta Allan, said the cost didn't justify the public benefit, mm-hmm. I guess the hundreds of millions of dollars that it might cost. And I think Ben Carroll has not made any. Yeah, so there was some YouGov polling done right after the Bondi attack, which found there was overwhelming support for stronger gun laws. Mm-hmm. So 44% supported a complete ban on the type of weapons used during the attack, and then 48% just supported tighter rules. But there was support across the parties, including mm-hmm. One Nation. So 57% of One Nation voters surveyed supported tighter gun laws, although fewer supported a complete ban on the type of weapons mm-hmm. used. But then 18%, which is the highest of any party, also thought that there didn't need to be any change.
We'll be right back.
In Australia, colleague Sarah Martin has reported there's mm-hmm. been a big growth in the number of guns in Australia mm-hmm. since Port Arthur, you know, following the buyback then when around 700,000 weapons were mm-hmm. removed. It left it at about 2 million, just over 2 million. And as of last year, there were more like 4 million. And in the last 5 years alone, she analysed registers and found there'd been a 10% increase in guns in Victoria and New South Wales, a 30% rise in Queensland, and a 45% spike in the Northern Territory. She reported that gun lobby group, the Shooters Union, had boasted it was winning the fight mm-hmm. against the long-standing crackdown after Port Arthur, and that the group had even outlined a strategy to double the number of licensed firearm holders in the country in order to increase the gun lobby's political power.
How has the gun lobby been trying to influence gun reform?
Well, first of all, it's important to note that the gun lobby isn't a coherent group. There are some larger, more powerful groups like the Shooters Union who make representations to federal government and have large public advertising campaigns. The Sporting Shooters Association of Australia is another one. There's Shooters, Fishers and Farmers, who were obviously vocally opposed to these recent changes and had been working on legislating a right to hunt in New South Wales in the months before the Bondi attack. But yes, yeah, so there is pressure on seats. I wrote about one gun lobby group, the Australian Recreation Union, that wrote to Labour MPs in marginal seats saying we're going to support candidates who oppose Labour's gun policies.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
As far as I'm aware, they haven't sent those letters to Liberal MPs in marginal seats, but they have met with both the mm-hmm. Liberals and the Nationals, you know, among many other stakeholders that they've met.
And we know that interest groups lobby governments to try.
Yes. So in 2019, an Al Jazeera undercover investigation revealed that James Ashby, who was Pauline Hanson's chief of staff then and up until this month when he became One Nation's party director, was seeking millions of dollars from the National Rifle Association, which is the US's most powerful gun lobby, mm-hmm. in a bid to seize the balance of power and weaken gun laws, reportedly. Mm-hmm. It was an undercover operation, so someone posing as someone who could connect him to mm-hmm. that group. And at the time, Pauline Hanson accused Al Jazeera of a political attack and selective editing. But it obviously shows the extent to which a group like that could hold influence if it wanted to.
And has anything changed since Port Arthur that would impact how a buyback now would operate?
It's different in two senses. Firstly, in the level of bipartisan support, there was widespread support for the Port Arthur buyback, and there hasn't been for this one. But it's also different in terms of how it operates, and the main difference being how it's funded. The federal government entirely funded the Port Arthur buyback by raising the Medicare levy for a year, whereas this buyback will be jointly funded between the state and federal governments. And one of the criticisms of this buyback has been that people aren't being compensated at market value for their firearms, whereas the Port Arthur buyback was more like market value. So that's for people who say they've got family heirlooms, or, you know, valuable pieces of equipment, that they're being shortchanged, essentially.
Yeah, and we really seem to be...
Certainly led to 700,000 weapons being surrendered and destroyed. I think it maybe gave Australia this reputation as having the strongest gun laws globally, even. The National Firearms Agreement was seen as like a world-leading strategy. Analysis suggested it did have an impact on the number of mass shooting incidents in Australia. It meant that when the Christchurch shooting happened, that was the kind of model that was looked to. The New Zealand government was targeting, I think, semi-automatic weapons of the kind that were used during the attack. It saw more than 50,000 firearms handed in at a cost of about $100 million. Again, maybe it's too soon to say if it was effective. It was definitely criticised at the time by gun reform advocates who claimed that owners were illegally stashing weapons, or that it wouldn't prevent criminals from, you know, buying weapons on the unlicensed market.
And all of this is intending to prevent another terrorist attack. How will we know if that's going to be effective?
I guess, yeah, it's a really difficult question to answer when the only metric is if, you know, a horrible event like Bondi happens or not. There was research done after Port Arthur by the University of Sydney and Macquarie University. They, in 2006 and 2016 and 2018, what they found was while there had been 13 mass shootings in the 18 years before the changes, there'd been none in the following 22 years when the modelling suggested that there should have been 16. Mm-hmm. They also found potential links between a reduction in other firearm fatalities, including suicide, but they were reluctant to link that to the National Firearms Agreement. I think it's worth noting in terms of, you know, whether this will prevent another terror attack, is that although it may be the most expensive part of the response, it is only one element of it. So the interim commission into the interim report of the Royal Commission into Anti-Semitism did recommend that states went ahead and prioritised efforts to implement the buyback, but it was one of 14 recommendations. It also included recommendations about the policing of Jewish community events, the communication between terror commands in states and at federal level, and it also included 5 confidential recommendations. Mm-hmm. So it's not to suggest that this is the only thing that's being done. So when someone like Pauline Hanson or Kelly Sloan says this wouldn't prevent another Bondi attack, it's obviously only part of the picture.
Thank you, Penry.
Thanks, Rebecca.
That leave a review. I'm Rafka Tuma. See you soon.